again. The same hate they say will make America great again. That whole phrase, like, make America great again, it's like, great for who? That's what I really want to know. And, like, I would love to hear that, like, really elaborated on, like, in specifics. For America to rise, it's a matter of black lives. Look, we all matter in this world. But right now, it's been an issue with black people and throughout the years of getting treated less than, for the dehumanized. In order for this country to really say we are free and this country is like this, the country of liberty, then black people have to be treated with equality. They got to be treated with the same compassion that each and every other nationality deserves. That's really what A Letter to the Free is about. Yeah.
Robin, to join Hot Talk, call 888-550-9105. And now back to Hot Talk.
Thank you so much, and welcome back to Hot Talk. That was Common. It is, you can catch it, I think, on Vivo or on YouTube. Welcome back to Hot Talk. Again, from where I sit, this is a series we're starting tonight with influencers, leaders in our community, discussing election 2016 in the studio with us. If you're watching, oh, you can't be watching us on Facebook Live right now because mine just cut off. But if you're not, Tracy Morning is here from the Honey Shine and Alonzo Family Charities, along with Broward County School Superintendent Robert Runcie, Miami-Dade Public Schools. I have to keep saying that to myself. Chief Ian Moffitt. Sheriff Scott Israel is here, and my road team, my ride or dies, Dwight Bullard and Chris Norwood. And, well, now, before I introduce my last and certainly not least guest, actually, he was the first guest on this show. Dwight, you wanted to say?
Yeah, I just really wanted to interject a little something because you brought up the notion of super predators.
Okay.
And Secretary Clinton saying that back in the 90s. And we got to contextualize that, right? Was part of the root of super predator comment was the fact that blacks had been criminalized. So the term criminal had become synonymous with black. And we see these dog whistle moments with immigrant being synonymous with Latinos, criminal being synonymous with black, and creating this sort of a criminalization of the idea of blackness. And part of what concerned me a little bit in the conversation that we're having is we're not dealing with some of the root causes, right? So the reason you're seeing a prevalence of crime in particular communities has everything to do with lack of socioeconomic stability in many of those places. So you have hurt people hurting people because they're hurt, and we're not dealing with it as a crisis so much as doing the same thing over and over again. So basically, we're putting ourselves in a position, unfortunately, potentially through something like Together for Children, to not deal with the implicit bias that created the problem in the first place. The high truancy, these black children being pushed out of the school system, and not understanding that the system itself is designed to create that problem. And we're not addressing the problem that the system creates. And so when we talk about social justice, we have to start really having a sincere conversation about things like restorative justice policies, creating those as a mechanism all the way through the tops of government, through the bottom of government, and really addressing some of the core concerns and treating things more as a public health notion or a problem-solving notion than saying let's lock away the problem, because we've locked away the problem now for the last 100 years, and all it does is create a larger problem. So I'm sure Gerard has some yes. intel on social justice and maybe dealing with these issues, but I just wanted to throw it out there.
Okay. Well, right. We're going to pick it up. I'm going to introduce our next guest, and then we're going to pick that back up. If I say it loud and I say it often, in the immortal words of Clemente Pinckney, you cannot get justice for what you do not acknowledge. And my next guest tackles social justice and the arts as creative director of the Bush Rens Agency. His work is like a Klieg light on injustice. In addition, he is quite the savvy media personality with shows on Plum TV, among other work. Gerard says our objective is to tell the stories of the disenfranchised, to humanize those who are constantly being dehumanized. As a film director, writer, and creative who happens to be black, I feel it is incumbent upon me to tell these stories. As black folks, we must take the responsibility for telling our own stories. Please welcome Gerard Bush to Hot Talk.
Hello.
How are you?
Thanks for having me.
It's so good to have you. Yes, you were the nucleus of this show. So I'm so glad. We met at Birth of a Nation. Amherst Jones introduced us. And then when I saw Against the Wall, mm-hmm. you know, I just thought, oh, my God, this is so brilliant. He's really, really honed in on how to address the problem. For those of you who haven't seen it, I put it up just a few minutes ago on Hot 105's Facebook page, so you can go watch it. It's very short, so you can watch and you can join us back here. First of all, though, I have to say that I love the view of the world from where you sit in those beautiful ocean breezes. And it, you know, it's a very good, healthy contrast, I guess, to the work that you do. So from where you sit, please share with us how your thoughts about the work that you do and how this election will influence it, make it better or worse.
Well, I think, first of all, thank you for having me. I think as a creative, as a writer, as a director, there's a tremendous responsibility as an African-American to tell our stories mm-hmm. Through the prism of being black. With all its nuance, I think oftentimes we make caricatures of ourselves, and in order to change that, we have to take responsibility for our own storytelling. That said, I've witnessed a weaponization of black folk. I think, by and large, black people are automatically perceived by a certain faction of the population as being criminal, as being weapons, as not being seen in the full body of who we are as people. And so with Against the Wall, what I was trying to sort of communicate in that story with Michael B. Jordan, Michael K. Williams, with Harry Belafonte, all of these folks that were kind enough to participate in that story, was to say, you know what, if you look by and large at black people, I think it's very difficult for a lot of people to empathize. If I can put celebrated people in those situations, people that you sort of, you know, their excellence supersedes race, and mm-hmm. you look at them and you automatically think to yourself, well, that's not a black, that's this person or that person. That's someone I admire.
Right. I love what Fast Company wrote mm-hmm. about the short, saying, as the most divisive presidential race in history careens to its bitter end, here is a stark reminder of where bigotry and prejudice lead the human race. Harry Belafonte's social justice organization, Sankofa, mm-hmm. has released a powerful PSA, which leaves the viewer unable to avoid understanding more about the experience of people of color in the United States. And it felt like to me that the writer was saying it's unable to avoid the understanding, because you see Danny Glover up against the wall
mm-hmm.
in a way, and you know that experience,
mm-hmm.
but you don't expect to see him in that experience.
Well, yeah, exactly. What it does is it provides context.
Right.
I think in terms of this election, you know, what we're dealing with, and let me preface this by saying, you know, obviously a lot of what Donald Trump has said, for me anyway, has caused me to be apoplectic.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the most consequential election of our lifetimes. I think that it, you know, you look back in retrospect and say, oh, okay, it was Barack Obama and his election.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that was important as the first black president. But I think today we are looking at the slow motion response to the election of the first black president, not once, but twice. Yep. Right?
Yeah.
And so this is a slow motion response.
And would so we agree around the room? Yeah.
So, you know, so it's a fist coming straight for you that took 8 years to hit you straight to the solar plex and the face.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's incredibly consequential. And I think that we need to wake up. And for me, I mean, I sell champagne. I sell luxury products. That's what my MO has been as a shop. That's what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
I felt a tremendous responsibility as a storyteller, as a creative, to get involved, to get engaged, and to tell these stories in order to communicate to our community and the population at large that we are talking about an emergency issue. This is an issue that we need to discuss openly and honestly and recognize that there is an assault on the democratic process in this country, and that there are a group of people that are incredibly angry and upset by the fact that suddenly oppression, when you have been the oppressor, when people are given a fair shake, suddenly feels like oppression to you.
Right.
Mr. Belafonte has said to many people, and he's one of my idols, if I were to have one, I would say that my idol is the man that I've yet to become. But I think that Mr. Belafonte and what he said is the person that stands by and witnesses my oppression is also my oppressor.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And so what's happening with Donald Trump, anyone that can say, well, it's economic, it's this, that, and the third that I'm placing this vote, I can't give you a pass on that. Right? So this is a conversation that we need to have aggressively and often. It's consequential. It means so much right now here today. And I love what everyone has said today in this conversation tonight, mm-hmm. in this conversation. Vote down ballot.
Right.
Because these people have obstructed the vote. They've tried to neuter this president and prevent him from making any real changes. And he's still managed because, right. you know, he's so brilliant.
right.
But he's still managed. Managed it.
Yeah.
He still managed it.
Yeah. You bring up a really interesting point that I would like to address to everybody in the panel. That the effectiveness of that piece is hoping for empathy. And I want to ask everybody on the panel, do you think that empathy is the necessary change agent? I'll start with you, Sheriff Scott Israel, and I'm going to come around the room. GoFundMe. You hear the microphones every time. Just think about it.
Yes, I agree with the statement that about empathy. But I got to tell you, I think that if we're going to heal, America's gone bonkers. I mean, we look around them. You and I talk once a month mm-hmm. about some deplorable act that either a citizen commits or a police officer commits, and we talk about it over and over again. And if we're going to heal as a community, I really believe that it's going to be through faith-based way. We need God in more people's lives. I really believe it does start mm-hmm. with that. I truly do. It also starts with police departments, you know, supporting parents. You know, there's a story about that I tell that happened to me in a church in Pompano. And I was not the sheriff yet. I was Scott Israel. And a woman came up to me and a woman said to me, a Jamaican woman. And she said to me, you know, I have three children, two girls. They were 10 and 14 at the time. And the boy was right in the middle. He was 12.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, my girls are angels. My boy's not. So the boy came home with a note that week, and he had been a bully, and he had been speaking profanely to his teachers and actually pushing not only students but teachers around trying to discipline him. So they sent him home. They suspended him for a day or two. The mom looks in the book bag, reads the note, and she takes, you know, little Johnny in her room and takes care of business like a mom should take care of business. We're not talking about child abuse. We're not talking about abuse of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking a good old-fashioned spanking, a mom trying to take charge of her home, a single mom working very hard. And her son told her that if he spanked her one more time, she was going to call the police. And she stopped, and she was I was the first person she actually spoke about that to, and I met her about a week later. And she wanted to know if I became sheriff, how would we handle it? And I said, look, I said, the way we're going to handle it is my deputies, you know, if a mom or dad or a grandparent or a guardian is spanking a kid and the kid calls the police, And there's no abuse. My deputies are going to be instructed to come in, sit on the couch, and watch you spank them a second time until you take charge of your home. And that's what we need to do. You know, we need to
I like that.
Work together with the
community. Right, they're not going to come and arrest him and take him away.
No.
Right. Ian Moffitt, Chief Moffitt.
Yeah, you know, we all have to be able to speak to our kids, have conversations around the table. We can't rely on government alone to do that job. I think that's how we're going to bring change about and make sure that people get out and vote for whoever they want to vote for. But those conversations have to occur. You can't rely on a civics class in school to do that. You got to have parental involvement. You know, when I became the chief of police, one of the things I was asked to look at was the number of Baker Acts that we were Baker Acting kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at it, and it was kind of high. So I had some training done with my officers, and I said, listen, I want you to look at the statute. The statute says clearly that the family members must be able to provide care for those kids. I said, before we Baker Act kids, we're going to call those parents and have a conversation with them, let them know what's going on, and then therefore they can make the determination to take their kid. Well, you know what? 3 years later, it had a 64% reduction in Baker Acting kids for the facility. Once again, the conversation between myself and my officers, that conversation with my officers and that family, allowing the family to take care of the child from that standpoint and having those conversations. So that's an excellent example of understanding what the problem is, being able to resolve the issue without potentially government being involved in it.
Right.
So that's part of that, being empathetic to the situation.
Yeah, I love that. Superintendent Runcie?
Yes. Let me first say that I don't believe that we will be able to police our way out of the challenges that we have. When you look at many communities that are plagued by violence, it's my belief that the biggest crime going on in those communities is the lack of opportunity and a lack of jobs. You know, it's always been my fundamental belief that, you know, we don't have a lot of bad kids running around. We got a lot of kids in bad situations. And if we don't take an honest look as a society and begin to make some investments to remedy some of this, we're not going to get the type of equity, social justice, and cohesion that we need. You know, it was Paul Samuelson, who was a famous Nobel economist, once stated that every good cause has some level of inefficiency associated with it, right? It can't always be about maximizing profits and everything that we have. There's got to be some level where we understand that to improve society, we may have to make what are considered less than optimal investments at some cause for the greater good of where we are. And finally, I would say I believe that this country is long, long overdue for real truth and reconciliation type conversation. And it'll just give you and it affects everyone, right? It's not just the poor uneducated.
Right,
and I'll just give you an example of that, right? There was a study that was done you know, a short while ago by a Harvard sociologist, Deva Pager. And what they did, they had a number of individuals go out and post to get jobs, some with criminal records and some without.
Right.
And let me just tell you what happened here, and I'll just read some of it. They start out by saying, you know, ex-offenders are excluded from a wide variety of jobs, running a gamut from, you know, septic tank cleaner to barber, real estate agent, depending on the state. And so you create a limited job pool. So anyway, for her research, she pulled together four testers to pose as men looking for low-wage work.
Mm-hmm.
Low-wage work. One white man and one black man would pose as job seekers without a criminal record, and another black man and white man would pose as job seekers with a criminal record. The negative credential of a prison impaired the employment efforts of both the black man and the white man, but it impaired those of the black man more. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Startlingly, the effect was not limited to the black man with a criminal record. The black man without a criminal record fared worse than a white man that had a criminal record. So high levels of incarceration in this country and the criminality that we talked about that's cast over a shadow over all black men, for example, implicate even those who are in a majority who are crime free and have no record. So you can't just say, hey, brother over there that had is his issue. No, it's all of our issues, and we need to figure out how we come together to again have a real conversation in this country about truth and reconciliation that's never been had, and how we're going to move forward. Otherwise, these issues are going to continue to fester.
Well, yeah, and they just continue to fester. I mean, I think that, you know, I hope anyway that we are opening up the space here on Hot Talk to, you know, begin the conversation. Are we at a break already? Yeah. Jesus! And that, you know, as we're having the conversation, that others are having it as well. I got to take a break right quick, but I'm going to come back on the other side, and we'll hear from Tracy Morning and my ride or dies. And Gerard, I'm going to bring it back to him and how that is influencing his work now. Stay tuned. I am Jill Tracy, and this is Hot Talk. You can give us a call, 888-550-9105.
Talk. We'll be right back on Hot 105.
If you iHeart Hot 105, you can listen to us on the iHeartRadio app anytime, anywhere. Take South Florida's number one radio station, Hot 105, with you at work, to the beach, or even when you're out of town on vacation with the iHeartRadio app. Take all your favorite Hot 105 personalities, music, and connection to South Florida anywhere with the iHeartRadio app. Download it now on Google Play or the iTunes App Store. Search iHeartRadio or log on to hot105fm.com for more. iHeartRadio app. Download it now.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 877-256-34 483 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 877-256-3483 to take your call right now. Call 877-256-3483. That's 877-256-3483. Again, 877-256-3483.
Home buyers, this is your chance to learn of opportunities in the housing market. Free advice is available on down payment assistance programs, lender participation programs. Join HFA, Freddie Mac, and Bank of America for a spectacular expo event Saturday, November 5th, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Palm Beach State College, 4200 South Congress Avenue, Lake Worth. Call 800-579-4119 or visit www.approvedbyhud.org.
Everyone deserves access to eye care. Unfortunately, some cannot afford comprehensive eye exams that detect and prevent eye disease that can lead to vision loss. The Florida Optometry Eye Health Fund is here to help. The fund promotes access to comprehensive eye care to help the less fortunate reach their full potential. If you know a child in need, urge them to contact Miami Lighthouse. Help them see a clearer future.
Ma, ma.
My precious baby is talking.
And there's a lot I want to talk to you about, beginning with your driving.
My baby is talking in complete sentences?
You waste so much gas with your leg foot and your jackrabbit starts. I could toss my cookies.
My little boy is backseat driving.
And he's up on the highway, too. Every 10 miles, over 60 miles per hour is like paying 40 cents more a gallon. That's like about 400 balloons for me.
You can count to 400?
401. And your tires? If you keep them properly inflated, you could save even more.
Oh, wait till I tell Daddy.
Dada? He's costing us big time, too, with all that junk in his trunk. How's he going to pay for my college, my braces, my tattoo?
Don't cry. I'll drive smarter.
That's not the problem. I got junk in my trunk.
Get hundreds of dollars worth of money-saving gas tips and help the environment at the Alliance to Save Energy's website, drivesmarterchallenge.org.
Can that announcer do change me, please?
Tom Jordan in the morning, the Tom Jordan Morning Show, and everybody knows it's on 105.1.
Ava DuVernay is on the phone.
Bow down. Oh, my God.
Put some respect on that. Derrick Rose beat his case. Will the same thing happen with Davis?
Yeah, wait a minute. Are you watching Chris Tucker?
Yes, I'm watching.
Wait a minute. You're showing character names and plot lines?
I'm watching Queen Sugar, yeah.
And we're back Monday morning, 6 to 10 a.m. with the best music information and what's happening in our community.
And welcome back to Hot Talk. 888-550-9105. It is Hot Talk after midnight. And our dear friend, Sheriff Scott Israel, has got to run. You've got another situation at the airport. Okay, they're in the middle of something. Tracy and Tracy Morgan. Okay, so you're going to turn that mic off. Sheriff Israel, be safe out there.
We will.
He's on his way back to the airport. Bye, guys. Love you, mean it. Blah, blah. They're on their way back to the airport. Apparently, there's a situation at Fort Lauderdale Airport and, you know, duty calls. So we left off with Superintendent Runcie. So Tracy, during the break, Tracy Morning and I were we were all talking, but I was sharing with Tracy that, you know, part of the problem that, you know, I can't help but think part of the problem with just this vitriol about the, you know, arguably the most qualified person to ever appeal for the office of president is that there are just many, many people in America that just cannot see it being run by a woman.
At all.
Yeah.
Can't see it at all. And, you know, we know the history of this country and its treatment in the past of African Americans, of our African American men. But we just have to look at the fact that men were giving, African American men were given the right to vote before women were given the right to vote. So can you imagine once we get a woman in the office, the minds they will lose, and wait till there's a black woman in the office. Their heads will explode.
You know, Michelle 2020.
Heads will explode.
Yeah.
And just what the sheriff was talking about, you know, I was raised by and still am being raised by this amazing woman who used to tell us all the time, the day I can't whoop your butt is the day I go sit you on the White House steps and let them raise you.
Mm.
You know, so just very in your face and about the business, you know. And it was my mom who showed me and was that reflection. She's this white woman. German Jew, mouth like a sailor, call you everything but a child of God, politically incorrect in every way. But it was her that showed me that I was this amazing black woman. And if our women come together black, they're intimidated by us.
Yeah.
You know, they're afraid of us coming together and having that voice. We get out there in the polls. That's who they need. They need our voice. Mm-hmm. They want our support. And I believe that is a And a lot of people won't say it, but I agree with you, Jill, that it's the fact that it's a woman that could be running this country that a lot of people have a problem with. Because everything that Hillary Clinton has gone through and everything that Trump has said, there's no comparison. You know, I always say that there's nothing more dangerous than a white man with power, you know, and especially a wealthy white man with power. That's I'd rather damaged over dangerous any day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I had a Andrea Drummer from Los Angeles was on the Facebook Live feed last week, and she asked the question. Wanted me to ask the question this week to all of you, that how do we speak to the hearts of people that are not singing in our choir? And I'm going to start with Gerard on that one.
Well, you know, first of all, I want to say that I agree 100% with Tracy in terms of, you know, a lot of objection to a first woman president.
Mm-hmm.
Also, to answer her question, I think for me, I recognize that in order for people to really empathize with a certain faction of society that they might not be familiar with, it's really important that we put that within the context of story. I think that human beings understand story. And at the end of the day, for me, you know, I'm a person that's obsessed with storytelling. I'm really interested in people and mm-hmm. really interested in the stories of people. And I think that if we could really tell those individual stories rather than this blurred version of what people may think of black folk or what may they think of, you know, Hispanic folk or what they think of LGBT folk, if you put it within the context of a story, it suddenly becomes something that you can identify with and say, that person's just like me, or that person's just like my mama, or that person's just like my aunt or my cousin or mm-hmm. my friend.
Right.
And it becomes something really familiar. And when you do that, then suddenly it humanizes people that you have for convenience, because the truth is oftentimes really inconvenient.
But most times.
And confrontational.
Right. But like once you have humanized someone that might have been dehumanized by a group, you know, the majority of people, it will change the hearts and minds of those people, and those conversations can begin.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the impetus for, or the catalyst for change and for movement in a different direction that hopefully is positive.
Yeah, and of course, that made me think of Moonlight. Have you seen it?
I've seen Moonlight, and I think it's a, you know, I saw it just the day before yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You know what, I think it's an excellent film. I also think that it makes people squirm in their seats.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you really uncomfortable because suddenly, you know, you have to. It wasn't that the characters are feminine in any way. They're
yeah.
they're, you know, these like really masculine African American men that you see within the context of male to male love,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a conversation that's really difficult for black people to have. I think by and large, you know, we have been emasculated as black men
mm-hmm.
since we got here. And I think because of that, we don't have the luxury to
be actually humanized in that way.
Right. Yeah. To, like, actually fill the complete embodiment and manifestation of who we are as black men in all of our hues. It's you can only be this particular type of black man in order to be a man as identified and as dictated by the oppressor.
Right.
And I think that's nonsense. I think that, you know, the breaking of stereotype and the fact that, you know, now we're getting into a situation where we are going to have those conversations. I want to just say one last thing yeah. about what the sheriff said about faith and faith-based, you know, whatever. Look, I was raised a Catholic. I'm not a practicing Catholic. I am a spiritual person, I think. I believe that there is some omnipotent power that is beyond what I can possibly comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that it's a cop-out to say, you know, let's leave everything to faith and church and this, that, and the third. And, like, you know, if I go home or if someone were to call the police on you beating your child, that is in some way acceptable. I think that's completely unacceptable. And I think as African Americans, you know, by and large, we need to start having conversations about, you know, our kids get beat down enough just in public purview. I think that at a certain point that we need to have conversations about what is acceptable. And I don't think that laying your hands on your child, for me, anyway, is acceptable,
right.
And I
well,
want to make sure.
Sometimes I know I want to lay hands, and it's not always in prayer, but I hear you what you're saying, Gerard, especially being a mother of three. When I was just recently traveling with my children in another country, and I remember we were going through security, and it's all hectic, and I just remember I had to check my tone that I had with my little son, because there were officers around and things like that, and I had to be mindful because I didn't want them to take the approach that they could speak to him in any kind of way.
Right.
Especially, you know, and I didn't want him to feel that he could be talked to in any kind of way. So I totally hear what you're saying. But I do agree that, I mean, you know,
there
when you become a parent, sometimes we just want to, you know, hug them real tight.
There is a fine line there with, you know, when it comes to corporal punishment and, you know, of our children, and are we taking on, you know, the bad behavior of our history,
you
know, in beating our children and being beat into
and then passing that on.
Right. As that is, you know, that is the remedy for bad behavior.
It comes down to, you know, let me get the belt. Let me get the switch. So
right.
I think that we need to sort of check ourselves and recognize that that is a behavior that's being replicated from the oppressor. And we need to remember that, you know, our kids, as they go out, you know, you don't want them to feel like in any way that laying your hands on somebody is acceptable behavior. It is not. And I think that, you know, parenting, look, I don't have kids yet. And I don't mean to, like, throw stones from my glass house. Like, I think that it's a very difficult job. I think it's the most difficult job. But I think at the same time.
He's right, though. Because it has education consequences. I can talk
about
it.
Yeah.
And then everyone can see how they respond.
You know, as a son of a West Indian father, I'm Guyanese by birth, I got my share of licks. Okay, mm-hmm. And I actually agree with you. I tell you, I have a 26-year-old son. I never laid a hand on him, but you better believe he knew who the chief law enforcement officer in that home was. And that's what I preach out there right now. I'm gonna teach and preach right now that we've got to take control and show who's in control of that home and parent and do the right thing. And I agree with you. I don't think we need to be laying hands on our kids because violence becomes a violence. And kids are a product of what they see and what they learn. I could tell you, you know, I had to control my anger as a young brother growing up, and I had to do that, deal with it. But I knew as a father that I was going to raise my son that way. And, you know, my parents did what they had to do, you know, as immigrants to this country, and they did what they had to do to bring myself and my sister up. But I agree with you. I think there's better ways of doing it. Even though corporal punishment is allowed by the law on the mm-hmm. books, there are better ways of doing it. There's better educational ways, better psychological ways, and sociological ways of dealing with it in your household. And that has an adverse effect on what's happening in the community at the same time.
Right.
And Buller, I think you're absolutely right when it comes down to that. That's part of that fact, that adverse effect, what we see around us. We're social beings. Yeah. We learn from what
and
we see.
And the world is watching.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what I would say, add to that, is that it is absolutely hypocritical for us to talk about the criminal justice system, zero tolerance, where we account for 5% of the world's population in the United States, but 25% of the prisoners, primarily black males that are there, and we're going to take the same zero tolerance criminality approach to our kids. That's what we're doing,
right?
And secondly, what happens is you miss a learning opportunity for your students. So when we have kids show up to kindergarten, there's this thing called a 30 million word gap.
Right.
It's based on, you know, this whole story, right? It's based on primarily social class, where you have parents that are just giving their kids commands,
right?
And then you have other parents having conversations with the student, with their child, explaining what's going on. So you have a kid that comes to school, and they heard 30 million more words than another kid who's getting the butt whipped all the time. So as a community,
I want to tell you that the last time you, it was almost a year ago, but the last time you were here, we talked about that, and Darren, the Crabman 305, over there was calling and texting me, and he was like, "Okay, what was that? I need to know." Key and all of his friends that you met, that the average person would not think that would have resonated with them so deeply. That my children are at that great of a deficit when they start.
Right, because every time you see those instances where a child is doing something you may not, those are opportunities for learning.
Yes.
And you depriving your kid as being your child's first teacher by this corporal punishment mentality.
Right.
Right. And so that's...
But you know, I think too, this is a whole nother show that is a part of the conversation as well. Because as parents too, there are a lot of single mothers out there that are trying to be the mother and the father, and they didn't have the tools or the experience or those that's showing them the way. So they're trying, and I'm telling you, traveling with my children, it teaches you so much, because I wanted to be mindful that I didn't show the outside world that this is how you talk to them, or this is how you treat them, or you think you can lay hands on them.
Right.
So we have to be mindful of that. Totally other show, but...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, that definitely is another show that we have to get to, because there is so much, you know, in there. Because when you go out and see, I want to say that was Ruben Roberts that was on the show. He's with NAACP, and we were talking about that, and he has a 5-year-old, and his 5-year-old was playing with another 5-year-old at, you know, something at Liberty Rising when they were working on that project. And his son accidentally bumped into another kid. And he said, and he watched the other kid sit there, 5 years old, sit there and kind of stew. And he said he could tell that he was getting angry. And then when he got close enough to him, then he went and jumped on his son. And he was like, you ain't gonna disrespect me like that. 5. And he was like, he could clearly see him modeling. That 5-year-old was modeling that behavior. That's what you do when somebody disrespects you. You jump them. But the kid did not. He just didn't see him. He just, you know. And so at 5, to have that kind of defensiveness and that kind of anger, you're right. It's coming from that deficit of having the first, when that happens in the household, having that conversation. Sharonda on Miami Gardens on line 2. Hi, welcome to Hot Talk. Sharonda?
Hi.
Hi, welcome to Hot Talk.
Well, I just tuned in and I heard one say that violence begets violence, and it seems as if the panel is lapse, but that corporal punishment is not should not be done.
Well, we're discussing corporal punishment and the pros and cons of it. I don't know that we've come there any pros.
Well, we haven't talked about the pros.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. I was over in the barbershop.
The barbershop wants to talk about the pros. But you wanted to say, Sharonda.
Sometimes. I'm for corporal punishment, but to a certain degree.
Okay, so you are for corporal punishment.
I am for corporal punishment. And as I said, to a certain degree.
Okay. What degree is that?
I believe that when children are young, very, very young, like toddlers, that you can, like, pop their hands and tell them no and train them in that way. But once you train them as toddlers, young, when they're very young, that stuff stays with them, and that's how you establish. When they get older, you won't have to do that. That's what I'm trying to say.
Interesting. Oh, so you're saying, like, in the instance of your 4-year-old touches the stove and you pop them their hands and say, don't ever do that again, that they will understand they got burned and they got popped, so they won't do that anymore.
As well, you don't just hit, stop, sit down, no, don't. I mean, you can pop, like, stop, no, and then you have a conversation. I use corporal punishment in my home, but I feel like I used it differently than my parents used it. They did. And I really don't feel like Michael Jackson and some of the others who felt that they were abused. I think I turned out well, but I did take some and I left some. So what I did with corporal punishment, after the punishment, I would have a conversation with my children, and I would let them know why this particular thing happened, how I needed to how I needed them to behave, so forth and so on. And then I would hug my kids and kiss them and let them know that I do love them. And they turned out fine, too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Chris Norwood.
Let me start off by saying that my mother was a church secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Mount Calvary Missionary Baptist Church, Newark, New Jersey. Went to Virginia Union University in Richmond, Virginia, a very religious institution.
Mm-hmm.
I went to church every day. I didn't even go to school to my neighborhood school. I went to school by my church. So I went to school and church every day.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother whipped me when she felt that I needed to get whooped.
Right.
And just to be very clear, and she passed away when I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And my father passed away before I was born. Mm. And I'm here today because my mother taught me right from wrong. And in her instance, however she showed me love, it also included a punishment, a physical punishment for doing things that she didn't feel was right. And so I don't know what the balance is. I'm not a psychotherapist, but I disagree that to discipline your child with force is somehow a reflection of simply, you know, our slavery past. I mean, there has let me just say the issue of corporal punishment is something that goes far back, well before our time here in America.
Right.
So I think there is a way in which you can punish a child with physical force in a way that is loving. And that's just, my opinion.
Okay. And also, let me add that I am an educator.
So you are an educator.
And trust me when I tell you, corporal punishment needs to be in place in many of those homes and in schools. I'm also a product of Catholic school, and we did have corporal punishment in my Catholic school.
And Gerard wanted to say.
So, you know, look, I really appreciate what you're saying, and I'm not a child psychologist. My father recently passed away last year,
mm-hmm.
And I certainly dealt with corporal punishment as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I had significant trust issues with my father. I'm talking about my own experience.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, trusting a parent is incredibly important. I think, by and large, if you're a single mother or if you're co-parenting, you know, it's a challenging experience. I'm not saying by any measure that it is not incredibly arduous process and difficult. I get it. But I also think that we as Black people have a tendency to be committed to this idea of, you know, disciplining with the rod rather than actually having a conversation. And what you talked about, what the conversation was prior to this caller,
right,
was that, you know, there's a deficit in the experience that our children are having and in the opportunity that they're having in terms of vocabulary, in terms of learning, versus their white counterparts, as a direct result of this constant application of corporal punishment. I think it is a difficult conversation to have, but I still think that it's a conversation worth having. I don't think that you should have it in being in judgment of people that are actually engaging in this sort of discipline, because mm-hmm. I think, you know, for the most part, people turn out okay, right? You know, on the other side of it, people turn out okay. What I am saying is I turned out pretty okay, and my dad was a disciplinarian, a very strict disciplinarian,
right?
But for me, that's not something that I want to break that cycle. That's not something that I wish to continue into this next generation. And I don't think that it's a conversation. Right?
Yeah. Your kids do that for you. They help you with that. Like each
to break
child,
it and say, you know what? Right. I think that I'm not going to do that.
To
anymore.
Do that, yeah.
It's called evolution.
It's interesting to me that I as everybody's talking, I'm thinking about, you know, I was just me and my mom, and I remember my grandmother spanking me at some point, but I just remember, I think I was like 15 or something, and my mother, she made me take out the garbage, and I didn't want to do it, and I went, we lived in a high rise, and so I'm walking down the hall with the garbage, and I'm like, if this bitch asked me one more time. And so, and when I came back in the house, I opened the door, and she smacked me so hard. That's the only time I ever remember my mother hitting me. But I will tell you that it never happened again, ever. And B, there was just something about how bad I heard her saying that that affected me deeper than her hitting me.
And it affected her, too, hitting you.
Yes.
It hurt her
That is definitely a show. Can we commit to doing that show?
Hey,
because
Joe,
we definitely need to do
Joe,
that show. That's a good one.
Joe, I went to Bergen Street School, and I remember Miss Belcher. at a public school, not a Catholic school, a public school, line everybody up
with at the door. With that wooden panel with the holes in it.
If you didn't do your homework. And you can call it what you want to call it. It's the truth.
Right.
And I was a very good student, by the way, because of it. Because I didn't want to get my hand tapped for not doing my homework. I'm not advocating for it, but I'm just saying, this is what, you know?
Well, I think that...
By the way, since you're talking about family, I went to Hampton University. Yeah. Thank you. I studied social work, by the way.
Okay.
I know we're about to close, you know. Just simply wanted to add this.
Yeah,
you have to recognize the humanity in people. At the end of the day, whether you're talking about corporal punishment or empathy, we can't get to the empathetic phase until people recognize that I am, in fact, a human being, and I need to be treated as such. I mean, I'll give you the example I was thinking of, and it was stewing in my head the whole night, was Trayvon Martin at 17 was considered adult enough to be put on trial and vilified as an adult. Right. But yet Ryan Lochte gets on TV at 32, and we write it off as...
Donald Trump is on his
70. Yeah. Donald Trump at 59, they're like, that was so long ago he made those comments. It's like, you're almost 60, sir.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So the problem, the inherent problem goes back to the we talked about before, is this notion that a black person at the age of 13 or 14 now becomes so much of a criminal that they become adults. They be cast into adulthood for all the wrong that they do, but yet somehow in the sphere of white America, we can sit there and say it's locker room talk that a 59-year-old is sitting on the back of a bus talking about this, or that a 32-year-old goes out in the middle of Brazil.
And it wasn't disqualifying.
You know what I'm saying?
All of that has not been disqualifying. That is a whole nother... Oh, my goodness. See why? Now you all see why I had to get them all on this one show. Yeah. Listen, I want to thank all of my guests. Tracy Mourning, Broward County School Superintendent Robert Runcie, my Chief Ian Moffitt, Sheriff Scott Israel, who had to leave, Gerard Bush, just amazing, and of course my most dangerous team back here, Senator Dwight Bullard and Chris Norwood.
From the barbershop.
As always. But I promise you that our show on corporal punishment will happen before the end of the year. Can I count you in? Very good. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you. I want to thank the fabulous girls who rock and Crabman 305 who holds me down. And I've got aluminum foil for you guys. Gotta go. Love you. Mean it. We'll talk to you next week. I am Chill Tracy on Hot 105.
This is the last take for the night. Understand, that's kind of late. And I gotta get home to my son, cause he's so special to me. I mean, I gotta see him, I need to breathe him. That's my baby, don't call me crazy. I love the studio, but I love him more. Let me give you what I got, so I woke up in the morning feeling fresh to death. I'm so blessed, yes, yes. I went to sleep stressed, woke up refreshed. I'm so blessed. Yeah, yes. Water in my face and everything is in its place. Peace of mind, even my grace. I'm so blessed. Yes, yes, yes. My grandma almost lived to see 92. I'm so blessed. Yes, 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 yes. My son was born healthy and beautiful. I'm so blessed. Yeah, yes. My mama's on my right side, daddy on my left. My son, father doing is absolute. I'm so blessed, blessed, blessed. Yeah, yeah, yes. And I know what I know. And I know what I know. Trouble gon' happen, it's just the way it be. Ain't nothing coming easily in this life. Sometimes you gotta work and you gotta grow and it gotta hurt. I'm sure you know, take a look around. Woke up this morning listening to this song, you're so blessed. Yes, yes, gonna rock the show on all night long, you're so blessed. Yes, so we up in here with our hands up in the air.
the doubt, 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 doubt. When the sleep stress woke up refreshed, fresh, fresh, fresh. Mama's on my right side, daddy on my left. I'm so blessed. Yes, yes, yes.
Talk with Jill Tracy. Always live. Always local. Always entertaining and educating South Florida.
Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m.
The views and opinions expressed on Hot Talk, guests and callers are not necessarily those of WHQT, Hot 105, or Cox Media Group. Our studios and offices are located at 2741 North 29th Avenue in Hollywood, Florida. Join us next week for more of Hot Talk on Hot 105.
Own a business but baffled by digital marketing? CMG Local Solutions can help you take out all the guesswork out of digital marketing. Reach the right customer with a simple online marketing solution that is right for you. Learn more at cmglocalsolutions.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Fantasia, and right now you're listening to WHQT Coral Gables, Miami's Hot 105.
Cox Media Group Station.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 877-256-3483 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 877-256-3483 to take your call right now. Call 877-256-3483. 877-256-3483. That's 877-256-3483. Again, 877-256-3483.
Minutes of today's R&B and old school on Hot 105 Miami.
Have a fancy car and diamond ring, but girl, you know all good things come to time. Girl, you know I'll do just about anything.
See a smile
on your face.
Don't
let your friends go messing with your mind.
When they say